We're now starting a new parsha. Very exciting. Parsha's Kedoshim, which is chock full of a lot of fun and interesting mitzvos. I suppose the last parsha where they might have been interesting, but they weren't so fun. So Parshas Kedoshim says, Yesh ba nun aleph mitzvos. There are 51 mitzvos in Parshas Kedoshim, Yud Gimel mitzvos asay, 13 mitzvos asay, and 38 mitzvos lo sase, negative commandments. Mitzvah Resh Yud Beis. Mitzvah 212. Riv means a fight. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this mitzvah doesn't cause too much of a fight within the family. Mm-hmm. That's my drasha for today. Mitzvahs Yiras of Va'im. The mitzvah of fearing one's parents. And this is as opposed to what was found in the Ten Commandments, that there's a mitzvah of kibud aveim. So most people nowadays just use the term kibud aveim as a catch-all term for and doing anything positive in relationship to one's parents, whereas in fact they're two highly different halachic concepts, kibud aveim and mora aveim, which is fear from one's parents. We'll see in a second what that is. Lira meha avos. You see, they didn't really use the term the horim, which is the contemporary Israeli Hebrew term for parents, is a gender neutral, whatever. So it says avos, the fathers. So it's like in Spanish, padres means parents, doesn't mean just fathers. So kilomar sheyisnaheg ha'adam im imo ve'aviv hanhaga shehadam noheg im misha yari mimenu. So you're supposed to act with your parents in a manner that you would act with someone that you were afraid of, that you really fear. Shademar ishimo ve'aviv tiro. You should fear your mother and father. Veloshon sifra, the halachic medrash on sefer Vayikra states, ezehu mora, what is fear? Lo yeshev bimkomo, you should not sit in your parents' place. Velo yedaber bimkomo, and you shouldn't speak in your parents' place. Your father's the rabbi of the shul. You don't go up to the shtender and start, and the lectern and start talking to everyone, unless you have permission. We'll talk about that in a second, that you could get permission from your parents to obviate most of these concerns. Velo soser es dvarav, even when you're speaking privately to your parent, they don't say, that's wrong. You say you have to correct them in a respectful manner, like, I think I read an article that's in something a little different, or my rabbi taught me differently, or something like that. You don't say, oh, no, it's not that, it's something else. You're not allowed simply to just go ahead and correct them. And sitting in the place means, doesn't mean anywhere that they ever sit. It means in the set place that's for their honor, like if a parent sits at the head of the table or has a certain chair, an easy chair in the house that they always sit in when they relax, then you're not allowed to sit in that chair. I was reading a lot of contemporary poskim say that a child is allowed to sleep in the parent's bed because the bed is not a place of kavod. It's not a place of honor that this is where I spend my time and this is where I give the appearance of, being around the house and sitting, in my armchair or in the chair at the table. What? Something like that. Yeah. So it's not a place of honor. The child is allowed to sleep in the parents' bed. So I would have thought the opposite. I would have thought that the bed is a more intimate thing. Father. So it's more of a chutzpah if you go ahead and you sleep in the parents' bed. Again, the father...
What age?
Right, obviously. At age...
6 months.
Right. So then it's okay. But the question is... I mean, obviously, when they're not there. So the question is whether a... Whether a 16-year-old child should, just feel like taking a nap in the parent's bed. I would think that's not proper, but unless they have explicit permission. But obviously, if the parent says, don't do this, so then it's a different story. But whatever, we're talking about min hastam, that you don't know for sure one way or the other. Mishur sheha mitzvah, the reasoning for the mitzvah, kasavti mitzvos kibud avos b'parsha siva yishma yisra. It's the same reason as kibud avim, that you have to show respect and do all good things towards the people who brought you into the world as a hakara satov, and furthermore, that society will function well this way. You can't have each generation totally ignoring and upending and being chutzpahdik to the previous generation of their parents. It's just that the world won't work that way. So it's very important that the order be maintained. Yeah.
Why is necessary to have separate mitzvah for Yira? Isn't it sort of can you learn it out as part of kibud?
But they're totally different. Kibud means that you do things. Bodily needs for them. Kibud aveim means you feed them, you help them get dressed, you take them to the market to go shopping physically, helping them walk or driving them nowadays. Mora aveim means it's totally different. It means the attitude that you could have to them.
Right.
So you could...
But kids don't learn this.
Well, that's why it's a mitzvah.
Of course they learn this. What do you mean? In school, that's what they're taught. That's what the parents should teach them.
Yeah. They taught that. Where they learned it, that's...
In theory, you could imagine that somebody would... You could do kibbud aveim. You could give your parents food and, you know, say, parents, you sit in the not-so-good chair. I'm sitting at the head of the table. Here's your food. Or, you know, things like that. You could be chutzpedik then and still be mechabed them. It's totally independent halachic constructs.
So these are not sort of general attitude mitzvahs. These are like specific things you're supposed to do and not do.
Right. Well, this is really an attitude. The mitzvah of Morah is really... Uh-huh. There are specific things that are enumerated, but it stems from the attitude that the Torah commands that we have to have for them. The poskim say that you're not supposed to think ill of your parents. I mean, obviously, you can only control your thoughts to a certain extent, but as much as possible, you have to try to gear your thoughts to a way that's really imagining your parents as if they were the most chashuva, amazing, important... respect-worthy people in the world to have the proper develop the proper attitude towards them, which will then be translated into actions.
Suppose they're not.
No.
Now, this is a real-life question. I mean, I'm not going to go into detail, but I have a friend who was so abused as a child that when one of her parents died, she asked a shayla of a heavy-duty person, and he told her not to sit shiva. So... sometimes, you know, your parent could be an alcoholic. You are allowed to think that's a lousy way of life.
Well, that's an overriding principle, because that's if you think, oh, that's great, then that's going to be dangerous for everyone. That's you're right. But that's a separate child. The separate child is if your parents are Rishayim, if they're really wicked people, so do these mitzvahs even apply at all? So there are variations. Basically, if your parents... are not necessarily up to the standard that we want, let's say not fully Torah observant, but it's not out of wickedness, it's out of laziness, so they were raised differently, then we normally assume that you do have to honor them.
I'm sure we do.
Right, that you do have to honor them in this manner, but, you know, the question is if they're truly, even in terms of that was a different issue, that if they're really just a horrible... people intrinsically, then that's a different story. But even we're talking about religiously, that if they're seeking the type of people who are just do it out of spite, and you know their whole lives are seeking to undermine religion and the Torah, then it's we really don't have a mitzvah to mechabed them, to fear from them. That's not whatever. So midine hamitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. How far does this concept go? Shafilu hikuhu v'yarku b'fanav lo yachle moson. So let's say you're sitting in front of the whole congregation. You're the rabbi. This is an example given in other sources. That and your parents. I mean, the Sefer Chinuch doesn't say the rabbi bit, but even if you're sitting in front of a whole bunch of people who are supposed to be respecting you, and one of your parents comes. At the front of the room where you're sitting or giving the shiur or whatever, slaps you on the face, spits at you, takes off your, important clothes, then you're just supposed to, you're not supposed to yell at them or embarrass them in any way. You're just supposed to sit tight, maybe quietly ask the bodyguards to remove them, but you're not supposed to shove them out or... do anything that would indicate that you're less than thrilled with their behavior, except, like I said, in a subtle manner that you can certainly ask them to be removed, but in a respectful way. That if your parent hits you, not, you know, advisable, but if your parent hits you, so you're not allowed to hit back, you're not allowed to do anything that could indicate that you're not thrilled with his parent's behavior, but nevertheless, the sages said that a man, talking about general, I mean, either parent really, but a person would be less likely probably to hit the mother than the father, but you should not hit a child over the age of bar mitzvah.
Or lifnei
iver. Right, because of lifnei iver, lifnei sheyesh b'davar mishum v'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, that if you hit a teenage son, so teenagers are a little volatile, so they might be very tempted to hit you back. Not just teenagers, talking about if your son is 40 as well. But, you know, the people that age, you think, well, I'm stronger than he is, maybe.
Also five, by the way. Also small kids. who haven't quite learned yet how to behave.
That's different. They're not as responsible for their actions. Here it says specifically, B'no HaGodol.
I missed the first part. Yeah. Okay. But I mean, still, that is actually a fact.
Well, that's chinuch.
If they hit you, they're not fighting these, so.
Right, okay.
So it's
not leave favor in that case. Yeah.
Right, I mean, it's not good chinuch. You're supposed to train them not to hit you, and so perhaps you shouldn't hit them so they don't hit you back because they haven't gotten that. Yeah, right, but that's not part of the... That's simply advisable. That's not part of the tzivu chachamim. There's an official rabbinic halacha that a person is not allowed to hit a child over the age of bar bat mitzvah. I mean, it's talking about son, really, because, again, they'll be more assumed to be the ones hitting. But you shouldn't do it because lest they hit you back and they'll be chai of misa, which is a separate mitzvah, again, that we discussed earlier, besides kibbutz av and morav, that if one hits one's parents to the extent that would draw blood or create a bruise or something like that, obviously less is also not good, but you're not fully chayav for the penalty. Unless you do something like that, then you're liable to the death penalty. So it's not so good. Again, if the person will not be liable to the death penalty unless they were witnesses and a warning, but nevertheless, you still be, you know, you could say it's maybe, it could be shogig, maybe a little honest that you're so enraged that there's what to discuss.
Anybody's around.
No. Right, I mean, you'll still be liable for divine punishments if nobody's around. Uh-huh. But anyway, so you shouldn't do it.
All this child abuse that takes place without witnesses. Mm. All right, that's another.
Okay, yeah, totally different question. Umenadin al kach. Not only is it forbidden, but if a, let's just use a male example, that if a man hits his son over the age of bar mitzvah, then you put him into excommunication. Because you really want to impress upon him that it's really a terrible thing to do, that the son is very likely to hit back, and you don't want to get anywhere near that prohibition.
Excommunication for that?
Yeah. Nidui is the first stage of excommunication. Everybody calls colloquially, like you were talking about yesterday, that excommunication we call cherem. Cherem is actually the second stage of excommunication. The first is nidui, where the prohibitions are less stringent, that you're not allowed to wear shoes, you're not allowed to really talk to people, but if it's necessary, you do business.
What does it mean, need to? How do you spell that?
Nun dalet vav yod, or nun yod dalet vav yod.
Like vidoy, or it's not the same shorish?
No, it's really related to nida.
Ah.
Nidoy. Okay. Uh-huh. Separate.
Uh-huh.
So, that's the first stage. But you're still allowed to do a little business with them. It's not as cut off, but then if the person is a repeat offender and has to be put in needle repeatedly, then there's a higher level of excommunication, which is called cherem. If the Besdin sees fit, they can put you in cherem right away. But cherem is that you don't have anything to do, no business, nothing, completely, completely removed from the community.
Like
yeah, shunning,
killed?
Yeah.
Is that what they meant?
Can be killed?
Yeah,
no.
No,
cherem in the Torah is different. Cherem in the Torah doesn't mean excommunication. It means placed under a ban where something was used for avodah zarah or something like that, so you get rid of it. It doesn't mean cherem, that's not what it means in the Torah at all. So first you put him in nidoy, which is a lower level of excommunication, and eventually, if he keeps from doing it, then you would, in fact, put him in cherem. But really, what we colloquially call cherem is often really means nidoy. I'm talking about books and stuff like that, so maybe cherem is more appropriate, because it's just, there's no official excommunication for books and things like that. That's more like just a societal convention that the rabbis declare or whatever, but...
they actually go there with a baby.
The Amr is the people who are get refusers, by the way, they don't get put into cherem per se. It's a different thing. It's called Hachokos de Rabbeinu Tam. That was something that was established by Rabbeinu Tam, that certain things you don't do them, but it's not official nidoy or cherem where the person isn't allowed to wear shoes.
Is he going to listen to you? You tell him he's not allowed to wear shoes.
In the olden days, when there was a formal Jewish community that could enforce its rules, if you didn't listen to the rules of nidoy when you were put in nidoy, then they weren't going to put you out of nidoy. And they could do harsher things to you. You know what I mean? Okay.
Nowadays, it's like... In America, religion is...
Well, nidui, it can't be enforced anymore because there's no official community. So if you get put in nidui in one community, so go to a different community. It's rarely used nowadays. And you have things... You know, if somebody is put in nidui unjustly, so not just somebody says you're in nidui, that you're therefore automatically in nidui, but if you're put in nidui unjustly, then the nidui doesn't work. It's not that just because someone declares it, it makes it true. And if you really did it maliciously, that you put someone in nidui unjustly, then you are in nidui yourself. So you have funny circles of rabbinic pronouncements about when somebody, one person put another person in nidui, So then they'll go to another rabbi, and the rabbi said, no, that nidui was unjust, so therefore the first person's really a nidui, not the second person. Then the first person's rabbi will go say, no, that's ridiculous, their nidui was valid, so the second person's a nidui. The whole complicated circle sometimes with these things. That's why it's important. In the olden days, it was better when there was a single communal authority.
Was there ever a single...
In places, yeah. In each town, there was a kehillah, and they ran things. In certain places, not. You're right. Like in Italy, so in Venice, places like that. So there was places where there was an ingathering. Like in America, there's no united community because there were traumatic experiences where people came from various communities in Europe. They were uprooted from their homes suddenly. They came to America, and they wanted to do things exactly like they did in Europe. If you have... things where people are just moving from one place to another in Europe to different towns. You move to the new town. You adapt everything about the new town, all their customs and things like that. But you have, so that's how it was most of the time. But there were certain times even in history, past history, far past history relatively, where there were traumatic things. You had like Gerush Sfarad, the Spanish Inquisition, when the Spanish communities, a lot of times, when the people left Spain, they came to the new communities throughout the Ottoman Empire. A lot of times they established their own yeshivas, their own shuls. They wanted to have an according to the Spanish rite as opposed to the Middle Eastern rite that already existed. And in Venice, so you had people who came from Ashkenaz and people who came from Spain and people who were native Italian Jews. So you had three communities with three shuls. There were examples of these things in history, but most of the time the town had a unified custom and people who moved to the town, just on a small basis, adapted simply just the customs of the town. There was an excellent article, by the way, recently, I think on Hirurim, maybe it was his farm blog, but I think it was Hirurim, where it talked about, summarized the halachos of minhagim, which is a very misunderstood concept of halacha, that when are you bound by parental customs, family customs, local customs, things like that. It's very unclear. The husband and the wife adopting the husband's customs, etc. It's very unclear. So it's...
pretty well do as you choose.
What?
So you can pretty well do
I wouldn't go that far, but it is more flexible than people take it to you. I don't have time to go into all the details right now, but I thought it was a very, very good summary. The sages told us that this is very stringent. Shafilo nitrifa das av. So let's say the father went crazy. Even if they're totally nuts, you still have to try as much as possible to act in a manner that honors them, even though sometimes it's very difficult. My mother has a good friend who's also a mental health professional. She has a call company that deals in geriatric services. So she wrote a book called Coping with Your Difficult Older Parent. It's a whole book that...
she can sell millions.
Was she put into me?
No. So she... This is a very tough concept that's being dealt with nowadays. It's very, very difficult for the children to deal with parents who are crazy. If they got totally crazy, that if you need to, you can put them in a home. You can give them over to people who are more suited to care for these types of people than you are. Although that's not the preference in halacha. The preference in halacha is really that you should try to do it yourself until it's absolutely impossible. And it comes up commonly nowadays with dementia, Alzheimer's. Also, not just in terms of really going crazy, but it's very hard to deal with that sometimes. And you have to know your limits and when you need to give it over. Even though you can think that... the honor of the parents is the absolutely overriding principle. That's not always the case. There is room in halacha to give the parent into the care of somebody who is more capable of doing so and not driving yourself crazy.
And in the end, it's not necessarily better for the parent. If you right. really are not up to it, if you can't do it, and you give it over to somebody who can.
Right, 100%.
It's like you're not a doctor. You take them to the doctor.
Right, so. Absolutely. B'hamam zerchayav v'kibud ha'avos uv'moram. So somebody who is an illegitimate child, which means basically that his parents, in conceiving him, did something that was very, very wrong. So you might think that you would not be liable for these things because it's only real children who are born from people who should be together. Although, I mean, obviously, if two unmarried people produce a child, so the child's not a mamzer, it's definitely bichayev and kibud aveim. They still did something wrong, but it's not on the same level at all. And so certain sources point out that it's talking about when the parents did tshuva. If they still continue to commit adultery or something like that, so maybe and they have mamzer left and right because they don't care about the mitzvah at all, so maybe then the mamzer would not be required to honor his parents at all. So he's a Sefer Chinuch says something very interesting, that a mamzer who curses or hits his parents, which is ordinarily a capital crime, is not liable.
So don't have mamzer, you know. I guess that's the lesson.
Right. So the commentators here point out that the Sefer Chinuch says later that the mamzer is liable when he hits his parents. So he says maybe it's the same thing over here, that if the parents did tshuva, then he is liable, but if the parents did not do tshuva, then you're not liable anymore. So it's a discussion about exactly the status of how much a mamzer is liable for all these things. Yeah?
It's still not good educationally or whatever for the mamzer to be in the mindset of hitting his parents.
So it's not liable. It's not.
They're not liable. But
he doesn't get shlishi and shabbos for it. Okay,
right.
He's putter. That's not. You know.
Right. The Harunu Zichronim Livracha. Our sages tell us binyan zeh im yitzavu ha'avos lavor al divrei Torah. So you have a relatively common case nowadays where the parents are not religious and the children are religious. That if the parents tell the child to do something that's against halacha, then what do you do? The afila mitzvah is the rabbanon, even if it's a rabbinical mitzvah, it doesn't matter. That's also part of the system of the Torah. She'ein shomin lahem, that you don't have to listen at all. That it says ishimov aviv tiroi v'shabsosai tishmoru, that it says right afterwards you have to keep my shabbosos, meaning that if your parents tell you to do something that's against the Torah, that the honor of God is paramount over. You don't have to listen to your parents to tell you to do something that's against the Torah.
It doesn't mean you have to scream at them.
Right, of course not.
You don't
scream at them, but you don't have to listen. So kibud avim means, let's say, your parent, you're normally within reason. If your parent requests an item, a food or beverage item, so you bring it to them immediately. So let's say you live just, if they call you, you live in Los Angeles and your parents are in New York, they call you on the phone, they say, I'd like a cup of water, please come visit now, come right now, bring me my cup of water. So you don't, flash this is, you don't have to listen, that's an unreasonable request, that you don't have to bring them a cup of water, you don't have to get on a plane and fly to New York and bring them a cup of water.
Supposing you live down the street from them and your mother calls you up and says, oh, you're going to the grocery store, could you pick me up some bacon?
That you're not allowed,
Well,
you're not allowed.
That's tricky. You're
not allowed to buy it for them?
You can't just give it to them.
You can't buy it either, can you? Or that's just Mar Zion and you...
No, that's more v'simnikiyim, that you're not supposed to do things that look like you're committing. But if you would find the case where you'd be allowed to buy bacon, let's say, if you need it for...
Feeding it to your animals.
No, suppose you have a little old lady in the apartment next door to you. She really can't get out of the grocery store. She's not Jewish.
Yeah.
I stop by and say, oh, Mrs. So-and-so, I'm going to the grocery store. Can I pick something up for you? Yeah, could you pick me up some bacon? And everyone, blah, blah, blah. Are you allowed to do that?
That's the, if you can overcome the visa and the kiyam issue. This exact case, you have to, I'm not sure exactly.
Okay.
You have to discuss how much of it's really would be reasonable that somebody would.
I mean, and the thing is, it may be costing you, really costing you in terms of your reputation,
but you're not chayev in their kavod per se, the same way that you're chayev in honoring parents.
You're not.
So you don't have to agree if you're uncomfortable doing it. Whereas if the parent, even if you're slightly uncomfortable, you would have to agree if your parents, ask you to do something mutter. So let's say, so if you're, let's say you just live one house over, and ordinarily your mother calls you up and says, I'd like you to bring me a cup of water. So you have to go run across, run next door and bring her a cup of water.
With a house full of screaming kids.
If it's totally unreasonable, it's a different story. That might be like flying from Los Angeles. But within some sort of reason, you have to go bring the cup of water. But let's say you do live right next door. So it's really no problem nor ordinarily just to run across the street, but the mother doesn't have any water in her house or whatever food item she's requesting.
Yeah.
So let's say it's Shabbos. She calls across the street, bring me a cup, bring me a cookie, whatever. Bring me a cup.
No,
and there's a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim intervening, or there's no Erev or whatever, so you have to say no. Sorry, I can't bring you this cookie right now. I can come to your house and bring you whatever food you have in the house, but you can't... I would certainly not override anything. Even the Rabbanan, you could say, well, maybe it's over the Rabbanan. You put the cookie in your hat or something, and you walk across the street. So even that's the case, that's not overriding.
Against buying bacon if it's not if you're not buying it for...
Because v'yisem nekiyim, in general, you're not supposed to do anything. It's the pasuk says, v'yisem nekiyim me'ashem Yisrael, that you shall be clean from not only from God, but from the Jewish people. So that's what I'm talking about. Remember when they're talking about the three... two and a half tribes that were stayed on the eastern side of the Jordan River. They didn't cross the Jordan River, and they said no. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, well, you at least have to come across the river to fight with us because of Esau and the Kim. You can't look like, oh, we're just relaxing while everybody else is fighting. So that pasuk is used to say that you're not allowed to do things that look as if you're committing a sin.
It's not used for... insisting that everybody join the army.
That's a different discussion. That's also used, yes, it's used for that. But you're not allowed, even if it doesn't fall into the technical things that Chazal forbade because of Maris Ayin, because of how it looks. So those things, even Bechadri Chadorim are usur.
Mm-hmm.
That even if something is officially usur because of Maris Ayin, so even if you're totally alone, you're not allowed to eat meat cooked in almond milk, for example.
Even if you're alone?
Right, even if you're totally alone, because something that's Maris Ayin, you're not allowed to do at all.
Why?
There's
nobody watching.
I know, but that's not just because people are watching. You're just not allowed to do it. It's a rabbinical prohibition. The reason given is because of Maris Ayin, they forbade it across the board. Something just us or because of Yisim Nikiyam, because you're just not allowed to look like you're doing, you're not allowed to really look, or be suspected like you're doing something else.
I'm disturbed about the almond milk and the meat. I thought you could do that.
If you put almonds, you have to put almonds
in
them.
Yeah. One of these deals, you have to make it clear.
Yeah.
Or it's like they used to serve margarine with the wrapper.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or if it's clear that obviously that there's such a thing as a something that looks like milk. Which is
so that's the question. Nowadays, maybe it's become so common that maybe you are allowed. Okay, that's a different discussion. But fine. So you v'yisem nekiyim is that you wouldn't be maybe certainly in a Jewish area where there was a real chashash, a real concern that people would suspect that you're doing something wrong, that you're not allowed to do it, even if it's not, there's no explicit halacha that says that, you know, you should not buy bacon, even rabbinic halacha. Technically, you are allowed if you need it to feed to a pet or to everybody. If, you know, nobody knows you have a pet, and people...
You can get it off from culture. Yeah.
Yeah,
of course, right.
So
it could be in the pork business, so you know, Cohen Brothers.
Schor is a different story. That you're not allowed to do business with Machalas Azuras. You're not allowed to have a store where you sell. Anyway, that's a different story. So if there's a real concern that people will think you're doing a prohibition, then you're not allowed to do it.
I said Midwest. I once saw Cohen Brothers funeral directors. I'm like, you know.
What?
I saw Cohen Brothers funeral directors.
Oh,
maybe
oh,
they weren't
very
hot. I don't know, but
maybe. Fine. The Yeser Prateha b'makomos b'Talmud. The rest of it's discussed in different places in the Talmud. B'harov b'kiddushin l'fi daiti. I think that the most is in Kiddushin. Do a Bar Ilan search. Get more avim, see where it comes up the most. Okay, whatever. But that's classically, the locus classicus, so to speak, for the the requirement of kibud avim is in Maseches Kiddushin. All place in all times, both male and female people and male and female parents. Then if you are violated this, I'm sorry, he doesn't mention over here. I thought he didn't mention. Okay, that the Gemara says, and in terms of kibud avim, even though technically males and females have exactly the same status in terms of the requirement to honor and fear their parents, but women, it's acknowledged in the Gemara, maybe it'd be a little different nowadays, I don't know, but it's acknowledged in the Gemara that a lot of times that a woman will not be able to honor and fear her parents the same way as a man would because she's busy with the household chores in her husband's house, raising the kids, cooking, whatever, things like that, so it's impossible for her to pick up and go honor her parents.
That's right. The kids are screaming,
right, exactly. Ve'over aleha. So this is in theory, yes, but sometimes it's acknowledged that, you know, when the parents walk their daughter down to the chuppah, that they're giving up a little bit of their due kibud and mora. Ve'over aleha ve'heikil b'yira asam uvital asei ze elim kein asam idas avivum chilaso. So if you were lenient in the fear that's due to your parents, then you neglected to perform the prohibition. But you can do it if the father was mochel. Shav shemochel kevodo kevoda mochel. That when a parent gives you permission to violate this, so to speak. So you know, the poskim, again, this is a little bit fuzzy, that not every possible manifestation of Mora Aveim is discussed in the halachic literature. So the Achronim give a lot of different examples. Some people say you shouldn't sit right next to your parent, for example. Like if you're at a wedding, you shouldn't be, the father and son shouldn't sit right next to each other. You should leave a space between, you know, you get your personal space. Right. Whoever heard of that nowadays? Nobody does that anymore.
You think your father would be insulted if he didn't sit next to you.
Right, exactly. Nowadays it would be the opposite.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So some posts can give different things, but in any event, you're supposed to stand when your parents enter the room at least twice a day. That's the Isaac tradition, once in the morning, once in the evening.
What?
And but if your father says, no, don't do that, so then you don't have to do it. You know, the other examples, of course, that is discussed in the classical literature is that one is not allowed to call one's parent by first name. Which is sometimes not even observed nowadays. That in secular culture, that would certainly be observed years ago, but that's absolutely not allowed.
I see that. I occasionally see it. I think it's appalling.
No. Well, the only thing I've ever seen, in fact, where there were, like, not your stepfathers or something like that.
Stepfather is a different story.
A stepfather is a different story. So you have to be mechabed. You have to honor your mother's husband. I mean, the Rabbanan, but the halachos are not quite as stringent. By a parent, it's questionable. Even though we say that a parent that was mochel on their kavod, that they don't insist on all the mora, whatever, they don't insist on being treated with this high level of respect, you don't have to do that. Some sources I saw said that in public, you know, a father shouldn't, you know, lounge, you know, put his arm on the father to relax, whatever. The father wants it, so it's different, but it doesn't look good, especially in a public setting, things like that. So the father says, no, go ahead. I don't mind if you do that, so then that's fine. But if you... So that's one thing. But there's a question as to if the parent says, no, I don't mind if you call me by first name, whether that's allowed. Because even though if the parent is mochel on their kavod, so then the kvodo mochel, then you don't have to treat them with that level of respect. But the parent is not allowed to be mochel on a bizayon. Mm-hmm. That's something that's a total denigration of the parental of honor due to them. Totally the opposite, totally out of bounds. The parent is not allowed to do that. So maybe nowadays you could argue it's not out of bounds. I don't think so. I think that it's an absolute halacha that you're not allowed to call the parent by the first name, even if they allow you to do so. And not only that, but you're not even allowed to call someone else who has the same name as your parent by their first name if your parent is present. And according to the poskim, right, that this only applies to a name that is unusual.
Yaakov wouldn't, you know.
Right. So the Rambam explicitly gives that example. He says, but names that everybody and their brother is called, Jewish names, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, things like that. So there's somebody, according to most poskim, even in their presence, but you're certainly allowed to call someone by, we normally assume that you're allowed to call someone by that name, even if your parents' presence. Yeah.
If your parents are sick, you're allowed to, you know, in davening, you're allowed to say, you know.
Right. If your parent is present in the davening, so.
You're allowed to say, you know,
say the
right,
name publicly. You might have to say in the before Avi Mori, Reb so and so. You have to give an honorary title. If you give an honorary title, so you would be allowed.
So that's why, for example, okay, Mishaberach, that's why it's customary. You'll say, you know, and you're saying, and my father, you say, Avi Mori, you know.
Right,
they'll say that, right, preface it like that. Okay, got it.
100%.
So, supposing you're an adult and your father's, so maybe your parents are divorced.
Yeah.
And your mother has been married. But you're not living in the same household.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. The thing is, if your father dies, say, when you're a child and your mother remarries,
yeah.
Are you allowed to call her second husband?
Make garden, you are allowed, but...
Oh.
It's not necessarily so proper, but it's, if he gives permission, you probably are allowed.
Or this one's Abba and this one's Daddy, maybe, or something like that.
You could do that, yeah. I mean, in such a situation, a lot of people will call them aunt and uncle. That's what I've heard. That if you a stepfather, at least if the child is old enough to know that there is a stepfather and they're not, not totally raised by this person. Again, there's no absolutely set halachos and all these things. You have to use your judgment to a certain extent.
If he's raised by the person, then they could certainly call them Abba or Ima, right?
You could. I mean, there's no prohibition. Okay. And in-laws also.
Oh, in-laws, yeah.
Right, you say Ima.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in-laws, in-laws technically.
Wait, isn't that a bizarre to your real mother if you call your mother-in-law, Ima? That's tricky.
You don't want, even really
in
want to
English,
call
that bothers me.
But I don't call my real mother Ima.
Oh.
Call my parents by English names, but okay. That's what we do. What we do is my parents go by English names, and my in-laws go by Hebrew names.
You don't mean names in this context. You mean
titles.
Right. Parental names, not first names. Right. So it says that technically you're allowed to call your in-laws by first name, especially if they give permission. Mm-hmm. But it was very strange. I was reading that somebody says, but it's customary to call them Mr. or Mrs. so-and-so, either first names or last names, or aunt and uncle so-and-so. I personally don't know anyone who calls their in-laws by titles or by aunt and uncle.
Wrong title.
Right. As far as I'm aware in the... Again, the halachic sources are not absolutely clear this is required, like I said. As far as I'm aware, in more traditional communities nowadays, it's customary to refer to in-laws by parental titles as opposed to by first name, even with an addition on
all of
them. Even
if the titles are the same that you use for your parents. Suppose your
parents... It gets confusing, yeah.
Your parents are Ima and Abba, and maybe your in-laws should be something else.
Well, it's just intrinsically disrespectful. Whatever the Lushan might be, to call someone who's not your mother, mother. Because that they, you're not making a clear distinction between,
even if you use different titles, like your husband's mother, your wife's mother.
And that somehow that seems intrinsically disrespectful because you're I'm sorry, but this woman is not your mother.
I have to say, I have been startled when in shul you referred to Sarah as Ima, and mm-hmm. I've been like...
But that's the normal practice, as far as I'm aware, at least the young Orthodox people nowadays.
Okay.
I mean, in the old country, with Yiddish speakers, people used to call the in-laws Schwer and Schwigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's how you used to address them, as opposed to...
Addressed them that way.
Yeah, not, not just...
No, it was second person, not third person.
Okay. Schwigger has become to be...
Why?
It's just like Yente used to be perfectly good, name, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. If I like that, I don't know. If I had my way, I would call my in-law Sharon Trigger, but I don't think my wife or they would quite appreciate that.
Yeah. Not quite that direct.
All
these people who do third person for a gadol, and they would call their in-laws?
They're close relatives.
All right.
Wow. I don't know. So third person, now that you brought it up, is actually an interesting question. In certain circles, Lakewood type circles, maybe some, not all by any means, they even talk to parents in the third person.
Right, see, that's what I was thinking.
Respect, yeah.
So I could tell you that maybe this is actually incorrect. Why? Just look at Parshas Toldos in the Chumash.
Mm-hmm.
When Esav and Yaakov are talking to their father Yitzchak, so Esav says, Yakum avi v'yochal mitzei beno. Let my father arise and eat from his son's hunting. And Yaakov Avinu says, Kum nashva v'achla mitzei. Listen, Tati, that's not the real translation, but please eat from my. Well, will you please eat from my hunting? So it's cute, but I think Chassam Sofer, other people point out that it's actually not a Jewish characteristic to refer to parents in third person. That is actually more correct in halacha because that third person again, you are supposed to show deference and whatever to your parents, but to speak to them. And third person sort of goes around the intimacy that is supposed to exist in the relationship, as opposed to just the pure honor. So the postgame who discussed it explicitly, some say if that's the minhag, if everybody's doing it in that place, so you know, you shouldn't do differently. But really, the more correct Jewish practice to establish is that children should speak to parents in second person.
Is that the
person.
Only place where there's direct conversation?
So, someone actually told me that when he was going through a very far frumped phase earlier in life, so he started speaking to his parents in third person, and he said they were creeped out and told him not to do it.
Yes.
So then he decided it was probably not in consonance with the Torah to do something against their explicit wishes. And then when I told him this, Sam Sofer, based on the Parshas Toldos, so he was very, very happy about it. But I haven't seen it very much personally, even within, you know, people who were whose parents were very great Torah scholars. They did not call them by in third person, as far as I. It's in my experience.
It's a thing in some circles where the wife, the Rebbetzin, will refer to other when speaking to
I've heard of Rebbetzin speaking about her husband in the third person.
But,
Too directly, not directly.
Not directly. No.
Not directly.
Not
about
directly.
Him.
Yes, but right.
Right.
Rabbi,
okay.
Rebbetzin,
the rabbi,
yeah. That's batamt. I like that. But
I know somebody who's pretty modern who does that. And,
not directly. To speak.
No, but when speaking to somebody else, she won't say
my husband.
She won't say his name. She'll say rabbi. I don't know whether do they say if I
Moshe Feinstein's
what? Would the rabbi like too?
That's a little extreme, I think. It's possible that some people do. When speaking about other people, you know, when there's a rabbi and a rebbetzin, when they're speaking to other people about the spouse, so there is what to be said for saying either my husband, my wife, or the rabbi, the rebbetzin, not using first names, but... right, but when you're speaking directly, to speak in third person between husband and wife, even when there are other people present?
I have heard of this.
Or Moshe Feinstein's wife, famously... When there was anyone else around, I don't think she spoke to him in third person, but when there was anyone else around, she would not address him by name. She would just say, Rabbi Feinstein, would you like this?
Oh.
Unless they were close family members, she would not address him by...
That seems right.
That seems
right. If you're someone who's on that
you're
level,
not encouraging... Right. You're discouraging overly familiar.
Right, I think when speaking directly to each other, I mean, the different couples have different things, but speaking directly, they still use... first names for the most part, but you're right, there is certainly something to be said.
It's a more formal world then, remember.
Oh,
so
yes.
Right.
Also,
yes.
Also, you wouldn't want to step in front of, say, you know, students or something like that. The Yeshiva students always think, oh, I should call him Moshe, you know.
There's a funny story about that also. No. This was brought into biography, that on the Lower East Side, you know, where Moshe was, I think, driving, maybe some of the windows were down so you could hear things, so there was somebody walking down the street calling out, Moshe, Moshe, so like, Moshe got out of the car and said, yes. So the guy turned totally white.
Purple.
He said, I was calling my son, like, you know, Khalilah, whatever, you know, call the Rosh Hashiva over to me in such a manner. He says, I'm too old to care about these things. So just, you know, something like that, you
sweet.
Know. It's, okay, you know, thought you were calling me. Bye. So he went back in the car, which is very funny. But that's where we get back. When your parent has an unusual name, and they're, even maybe if they're not in their presence, the different sheet is about exactly what the story is, then you're not allowed to call another person by this unusual name. That's...
And, let's see, while we're on this again, for wrapping this
okay.
up, you're also not supposed to marry a woman with the same name as your mother?
That's not a real halacha. That's Tzavos Reb Yehuda Chosid.
Oh, yeah, oh, okay, right.
So in Tzavos, in the will of Reb Yehuda Chosid, where he instructs his descendants, the question is whether everyone should try to follow the will or whether it's only for the descendants, because he saw that it wouldn't be good for them spiritually in the future. So he says that... I think two mechutanim should not have the same name, and a son-in-law and father-in-law should not have the same name, and mother-in-law and daughter-in-law should not have the same name. So we generally, if such a shidduch is suggested, so you try to find any way out of it possible. Like if they have the same Hebrew name, but one goes by the English name and not by the Hebrew name, there are usually ways out of it. It's very unusual that they really have exactly the same Hebrew name and they both go exactly.
And then you would say you shouldn't get married?
No,
not
are,
I mean, it would be said if
there
it
are,
not seem wonderful.
Especially in the Chassidish world, yeah. I mean, but then you can research the name before they even meet, so whatever.
Yeah. Well.